Chapter 10 Raymarth Wood Manor was far grander in appearance than its size would indicate. The number of ostentatious decorations, mostly featuring the hair and chevron of Sir Gammon, belied the actual modest nature of the hall. It was a two-story building, with impressive peaks and dainty spires overlooking a tidy, well-kept yard. But it was not large, Tyndall could see. It was half the size of Gerlor's Hold, back in Sevendor, if half as shabby. The manor folk were hard at work when the two knights magi arrived. Though it was high summer, there was still much to prepare for the summer mowing and autumn's harvest. Only a few looked up to watch the strangers dismount and chase down the hall's steward. Once the man was convinced that they were gentlefolk and had legitimate business with Sir Gammon, his brusque manner was replaced with one of surpassing obsequiousness. Sir Gammon was inspecting the far end of the estate, they were informed, and was not expected to return before nightfall. Lady Crestine and her daughter, however, were at leisure in the garden, and the man ran off to see if they would deign to meet the knights.
"Does this place seem a little odd to you?"
Rondell asked him, mind to mind, as they stabled their horses.
"A little," Tyndall agreed, "like it's trying a little too hard to convince us of something. Let's play this on the mundane side, shall we?
Huh?
Don't mention magic. We're just a couple of young errants. Mention magic and that might complicate things."
"How so?
Just trust me, all right?"
Tyndall insisted. The steward returned in a short time to inform them that after they'd had an opportunity to refresh themselves, the lady of the manor would enjoy conversing with them in the garden. Tyndall may have been imagining it, but there was a devilish look in the man's otherwise supplicant eye. They were shown to the hall, where they were granted water and a towel to wash the road dust from their faces, and a sip of wine in front of the tiny fire. The interior of the hall was even more ostentatious than the exterior, filled with tapestries, paintings, statues, steles, and other noble regalia, all featuring rabbits. By the time they finished refreshing themselves and were ready to meet the lady, Tyndall felt that the motif had been entirely overdone. He was not sophisticated in matters of taste, but even his humble aesthetic was disturbed by so many rabbits so proudly displayed.
"It's like someone is fiercely proud of being an herbivore,"
Rondell agreed with him as they were led through a gallery to an enclosed garden.
"It's creepy."
The garden was meticulously kept, with shrubs and herbs and flowers bursting forth from well-made stone risers. The season and the weather seemed to conspire to push out as many blossoms as each plant could bear. It has, as its central point, a bathing pool, no more than 10 feet on a side. While it looked cool and inviting in the heat of the day, the effect was lessened, Tyndall thought, by the 12-foot-tall topiary rabbit that loomed benevolently over it. Tyndall supposed that the vaguely rabbit-shaped bush, he could tell where the ears and head were supposed to be at any rate, was designed to look fearsome, but like his friend, he just found the decoration creepy. Fortunately, there were more attractive things to stare at, namely Lady Crestine, who was escaping the heat of the day by plunging into the cool water and then lounging in her soaked shift so that the summer breeze could keep her cool. The wet garment left little of Trigg's gifts to speculation. Lady Crestine was a well-formed, mature woman. Her daughter lounged nearby, a light summer mantle cast over her shift for modesty's sake. She had merry eyes and a pretty face, even prettier than her mother's, and both mother and daughter seemed utterly at ease at the sight of two young errants. The servant announced them formally.
"Presenting my lords, Sir Tyndall and Sir Rondell, Knights of Sevendor, who beg a word from Lady Crestine of Raymothswood. The Lady Thena in attendance," he called, as if in front of a court full of people.
"My lords,"
the woman's soft, warm voice said, as she wrapped her mantle about her shoulders. Such a gesture would have been modest in most women, but Lady Crestine managed to make it into a seductive dance. Her eyes sparkled as they lighted on the two young knights.
"We bid you welcome to Raymarth Wood, and pray your business is not so dire that you cannot spare a few hours of this glorious day to converse with two ladies near to overcome by boredom."
"While our errand is pressing," Tyndall replied smoothly, while Rondell's jaw gaped, "it is not so pressing that we could ignore the rules of hospitality, my lady. Should our business be concluded positively, I see no reason why we should not enjoy a few hours of idle amusement with two such gracious noble women.
Tin, Rondell said mind to mind. She's down near naked. It's a hot day,
Tyndall observed.
Shut up. I'm working.
There were only a few reasons why a woman would abandon propriety in such a way, Tyndall knew, and few of them involved her naivete about such things. A lady of the manor had certain social expectations. Meeting guests, particularly strangers, required a level of presentation that Lady Crestine had not indulged in. While it could merely be a mark of her casual nature, Tyndall reasoned, as Lady Pentandra was wont to say, you rarely see boobs unintentionally. Tyndall was on his guard. He could understand why Rondell was standing there like the village idiot in the face of Crestine's sensual display. He'd likely only seen a handful of boobs in his life, and that included his mother's when he nursed. But Tyndall had attracted attention from unlikely quarters, and he was wise enough now to know when a woman was using her charms to influence, more than to allure. Lady Crestine was up to something.
Then pray state your business, Sir Knight, and let us dispense with it,
Crestine said, as she toweled her dark blonde hair dry, her light blue summer mantle peeking open.
My husband is away inspecting his estates, and is not due until eventide, so you will have to contend with my poor management in his stead, if the matter cannot wait.
Tyndall knew then that the matter was not naivete, which he had doubted to begin with. That meant her purpose was either business or pleasure. Tyndall found himself prepared for either eventuality, or a combination of the two. While he enjoyed the spectacle she granted, he wasn't going to let this woman gain the upper hand in negotiations through the pretense of immodesty.
My colleague and I represent the Castellan of Sevendor, Sire Kay of Carguenyon, known far and wide as the Dragon Slayer. He began, perhaps you have heard of him, milady? The Wilderland's knight who bested the field at Chepstow Spring Fair a year ago to win the hand of a lady and an estate. Such news has reached me in this remote manner,
she admitted, smiling. It was a pretty smile. The name of Sire Kay sparked Lady Thena's interest as well, and she sat up on her bench attentively.
What business does our humble estate have with such a worthy knight?
She pushed a stray lock of hair behind her ear, exposing her slender neck. Tyndall could hear Rondell swallow.
Amateur. In the assumption of his new estate, Sire Kay wishes to clear the accounts. It is stated in the estate's book that Raymoth Wood owes a sum to Carguenyon for the purchase of 100 weight of honey. As we were passing by, he imposed on us to stop and inquire after the bill. Such things oft escape my husband's attention, she said with a girlish giggle. He is a very important man, you know, the head of the Council of Sephon.
Tyndall had no idea what that was, but she sounded like he should be impressed. He made a point not to be.
Surely he has an attendant who sees to such things, my lady,
reproved Tyndall.
We did. Alas, old Gilmar died last year of a wasting cough. Our new man is learning the job, but he has yet had the chance to clear some of our accounts. I sincerely apologize for the oversight, gentlemen.
Bama!
She called in a harsh voice that belied her previous gentle tone. A few moments later, a thin, pasty-faced man with a scraggly beard appeared, breathless, his eyes wide with fear.
Yes, m'lady,
he asked with a shaky bow.
These gentlemen are here inquiring as to an account on behalf of a friend of theirs. They say we owe for 100 weight of honey, more than 2 years ago. The estate's name is Carguenyon.
Carguenyon, milady?
Parmar asked, confused.
It appears that your father clearly bungled yet another matter, Parmar, and it falls to you to set it right. Investigate the book and verify the debt, and report back here immediately. In the meantime, I think we will have wine here in the garden to enjoy the coolness of the water on such a hot day. Have it delivered, and then ensure we are not disturbed unless I send for you. Is that understood?
Yes, milady,
he said, bowing even lower.
I shall see to it at once.
She turned back to Tyndall while he scurried off.
His father was just as weak,
she confided with disgust.
an ineffectual man who couldn't do the simplest thing without guidance. I do not know why my husband persists in keeping Bamar in his sire's place. If anything, he is even worse. But he can read, she admitted, and he does know his place. Now, she said, gesturing to the pleasant poolside garden under the looming eye of the verdant rabbit, would you perhaps like to doff those mantles and lay aside your swords for an afternoon, gentlemen? She asked sweetly. My daughter and I have been confined here for days by the heat, and it is 2 weeks yet until the next ball of any consequence. Without distraction, we may soon succumb to hysteria.
Well, we wouldn't want that, agreed Tyndall, smiling, as he unfastened his cloak pin.
What the hell are you doing? Rondell screamed in his mind. I'm getting comfortable, Tyndall replied. You should too. This is going to take a while. Why? I don't know yet, but she's up to something. Just follow my lead for once.
Rondell didn't reply, but he did remove his summer mantle and lay it on a stone bench with Tyndall's. Next, they removed their mage blades and laid them on top.
So what have you ladies been filling your time with today?
Tyndall asked as Lady Crestine led him by the hand to a larger bench, large enough for two, and sporting a long, soft pillow of down.
Idle gossip, Lady Thena said. Vicious, brutal, scandalous gossip. A common weakness of our sex, I'm afraid,
she added with a coquettish smile.
How delightful,
Tyndall said with a grin, as he settled into the great stone seat. Lady Crestine settled in beside him, an intoxicating cloud of floral scent following her. Rondell just stood there, looking awkwardly around, as if purposefully avoiding the seat next to Lady Thena.
Sit down, idiot,
Tyndall shot, and don't mention magic.
Where do I sit? Next to the pretty girl, maybe?
Tyndall shot back sarcastically.
I said follow my lead. I'm smiling, you be smiling. I'm sitting down, you sit down, and then keep your mouth shut. I can do that,
Rondell said, and then plastered a smile on his face before sitting down next to Thena.
Tin, she's kind of young, isn't she? Only a year or two younger than we are,
Tyndall pointed out.
She's getting to sit next to a handsome young knight-errant. Some girls go their whole lives without getting a chance like that. It's what they dream about. Or didn't you figure that out at Chepstow? So shut up and let her enjoy the moment. I'm not handsome,
was all Rondell could respond.
Try not to let her know that,
Tyndall advised, and turned his attention to the woman sitting so alluringly next to him.
Now, he began, settling in. As we are strangers in your land, we are curious about its history and the reputation of your noble lord. Is he a puissant gentleman?
Daddy,
Thena burst out with a giggle.
My daughter is in politic,
Lady Crestine said smoothly.
Her father is of noble lineage and distinguished house. Sir Gammon was properly squired and belted, but his skill lies far more in oratory than action. He has never drawn his blade in anger,
she admitted.
When he serves out his duty to his liege, he oversees the garrison at Garsby Castle, protecting our land from invasion from Beaucaraton.
Tyndall was surprised. I was not aware of the danger of invasion from Beaucaraton, he admitted.
There isn't one,
agreed Lady Crestine, who seemed disappointed in the political situation.
My husband spends a month watching the wheat grow outside of the castle walls. Every autumn,
she said with some deliberation,
betwixt the equinox and the Feast of Huin. We ladies are left in solitude at that time, and are always welcome of diversion.
Tyndall almost swallowed nervously before he caught himself. Her meaning was unmistakable. One thing he had learned from the patient tutelage of Lady Pentandra in the arts of love was knowing the subtle ways a woman indicated how desirous she was, often in ways she herself was unaware of. Tyndall had a suspicion that Lady Crestine knew precisely what she was doing and what she was saying. He responded as he knew she wished.
Mayhap, if we are near Raymoth's Wood, we could stop by to alleviate your inactivity,
he said diplomatically.
But if your lord is not renowned for his skill at arms, of what use is his oratory? Oh, my lord has a gift with speech,
she said with quiet humour.
He can expound at length upon whatever topic comes to mind. Endlessly.
Do his words have such value, my lady? Asked Tyndall. It was clear that Lady Christine had mixed emotions about her husband's talents.
Apparently his entourage believes so,
she admitted with a sigh.
He is considered a troubadour of some repute, by some. A small but small band of knights and admirers who follow him incessantly, eager for whatever spittles of wisdom or thick, steaming piles of verse might fall from his lips. My lord sounds charismatic,
offered Rondal, looking uncomfortable with Lady Thena's proximity and casual attire. For her part, the young noblewoman was eyeing his fellow like a kitten eyes a mouse that might or might not be too large for its abilities, but who was daring enough to make the attempt. Poor Rondal. He had no idea what a voracious young woman, absent the frontiers of propriety, was capable of. And from her attitude and demeanour, Lady Christine was not discouraging of her daughter's attentions. On the contrary.
Charismatic, she asked, amused. Mayhap. Our marriage was arranged by my father and seemed a well-suited one at the time. He was charismatic, she disclosed. I had hopes of... Well, let us not speak of that. Our union is pleasant enough. My lord's business and his philosophies keep him away frequently, and my daughter and I have found amusement and distraction in society. We attend what functions we're able, and entertain ourselves at need. Ah, my servant returns. Let me pour us some cool wine, gentlemen,
she insisted, leaving the bench and her mantle behind. Clad only in her swimming shift, still damp from the pool, there was little Trigg had given her that Tyndall did not gain a glimpse of. That confirmed it enough in his mind. Tyndall had no doubt just in what form that entertainment occurred. Regardless of her other motivations, here was clearly a woman who exercised her frustrations by supplementing her marital fulfilment with, well, with passing knight's errand, he reasoned, like himself. He could not help but feel excited by that thought. Rondal was too, but not in a positive way.
Tyndall, what are we doing? At least it's we now,
Tyndall said as he watched Lady Thena straighten Rondal's baldric unnecessarily.
You're being seduced, he observed. See how she's touching you when she doesn't need to, and how she's looking at you and looking away. She admires you. In a moment she's going to ask you to tell her how manly you are somehow. Don't disappoint the lady. Brag a little. But that's hardly chivalrous. It's completely chivalrous. You are entertaining a lady. That's what a good knight does. She just wants details, so she knows who she's seducing. She's not seducing me.
Not if you stick with that attitude, agreed Tyndall.
She's glorious, holy twat, Ron. When the universe decides to grant you a boon, dare to take it, won't you? Bravery on the field is hollow if a man is a coward in the bedchamber. We're not in a bloody bedchamber, he said, as Lady Christine brought a tray of silver goblets around to his bench. We're in a bloody garden in the middle of the bloody afternoon, which means that we can actually see their faces without the glamour of candlelight, Tyndall pointed out. They might not be the fairest ladies in the land, but they are comely enough. Pretty ladies in a beautiful garden with a creepy giant rabbit. This is an errant's dream. Those sorts of dreams usually end with an angry husband and father with a band of fanatical followers with swords, chasing the hero out of the domain. Relax, Tyndall soothed. He's far from here. We have legitimate business, and believe me, this is not Milady's first such entertainment. She's of the kind who treats love the way some knights treat tournaments, and she's grooming her daughter for the same. You are merely an exercise, he pointed out, so enjoy the examination for once. To Ishi's lips,
Lady Thena said, dipping her finger in the sweet white wine and letting a single drop fall from her lip to the ground in solemn libation. It was a maiden's blessing. It required a response. Tyndall watched in amused sympathy as his horrified fellow was forced to complete the rite, or humiliate his hostess. He knew which course propriety and chivalry required. Rondal swallowed, dipped his own finger into the wine and touched his mouth.
From Ishi's lips springs the font of love, he mumbled.
Lady Thena looked utterly pleased with herself. She leaned forward and planted a soft, sweet kiss of surpassing elegance on Rondal's startled lips.
"Kiss her back, you idiot,"
Tyndall growled into his mind.
"This is a sacred rite."
Rondal didn't reply, but he found it within himself to respond with some cautious enthusiasm. Lady Thena broke the kiss and relaxed, looking quite pleased with herself. The rite was supposed to ensure a maiden's future happiness, under the pretense that the holy lips of Ishi fell best on lips oft kissed. The rite could be as chaste as a peck, or not, depending on the maiden, the lad, and the circumstances. But to decline even a peck was considered a bit of an insult, once she had begun the rite. It was a coquette's game, but one that frequently led to even deeper rites of the goddess of love. Even respectable girls from conservative families performed the rite. It did not necessarily indicate that a lass was interested in a lad, but that was certainly the case in this instance.
"Thank you, my lord,"
Thena said sweetly, sipping her wine.
"May I inquire as to your position and station? Surely a knight so young has yet to bear his blade,"
she added suggestively.
"It's a challenge,"
Tyndall counselled, amused, as Lady Clestine returned to settle beside him.
"Do not fail it. Charge ahead with valour."
Despite the encouragement, Rondal stammered and stumbled to the point where Tyndall was forced to rescue him.
"Actually, my lady, Sir Rondal was born a commoner, as was I. Simple mountain lads from the vales of the Mindons, apprenticed to a common trade. But then the goblin invasion occurred,"
he said gravely, "and our homeland was overrun."
"Duin protect us,"
Lady Crestine said, her eyes wide in genuine fear.
"We have heard of the invasion, but we were there at the beginning,"
affirmed Rondal.
"Finally."
Rondal had, at least, learned enough of warfare to be able to discourse on it with some authority and confidence. He almost didn't sound like an idiot.
"At Beauvoir Vale, which now lies at the heart of the dead god's dark empire, we were besieged, and both of us were required to take up arms in defence.
We were rescued from certain death only by the intervention of Minolan the Spellmonger," he said, keeping their relationship with the man a secret for the moment. So the boy wasn't a complete idiot.
"That sounds awful,"
Lady Thena said, enrapt.
"It was worse than you can possibly imagine,"
Tyndall agreed. "Only what came after was worse. Once rescued, we followed Master Minolan into battle, as did many Bovarli. For our service on the field at the Battle of Timberwatch, we were knighted by the hands of two dukes, the night before Duke Lengwin died from his wounds." It never hurt to drop a few names, and naming a recently deceased duke could not help but elevate their status.
"Surely many fought in that battle,"
Lady Crestine observed,
"yet not all came away ennobled and knighted."
"There were dark deeds done that day," Rondal said with sincere gravity. "I pray you, ladies, not ask us our parts, for they were fell. So many did not return from that fiery field that I would not sully their memory with a casual account."
"Ah, well played,"
Tyndall encouraged. "You completely avoided the fact that you were stuck safely in a tower for the entire battle while I repeatedly risked my ass."
"I've been practicing for that one," admitted Rondal. "It's kind of embarrassing to note that you got your knighthood for accurate field observations."
"You've more than made up for it since," reminded Tyndall.
"That was even more treacherous a day than the Battle of Cambrian Castle, the day that Sire Kay and Lady Lenodara and a hawk maiden slew the dragon,"
added Tyndall out loud. Nothing could top that boast, lest it was he who had wielded the lance. "In truth, we are still recovering from that battle. Sire Kay, whom we serve, has mandated a period of rest and repose before we return to battle."
"I do hope you have found sufficient comfort and support, Sir Tyndall,"
Lady Crestine said, licking her lips. Her eyes held new respect for her guests, and they didn't even know that they were magi, he reminded himself, just a couple of knights errant out erring.
"Well, save to further our studies," reminded Rondal. "We took part in the War College at Raylan Corps this spring, and we have of late been practicing tilting and other noble arts at Chepstow Castle. That was hardly restful." "Such busy, strong young knights,"
Crestine smiled.
"We are so favoured to have you here to entertain us today." "What is it?"
she demanded, as her obsequious steward reappeared. Lady Thena, who had arrayed herself quite comfortably against Sir Rondell, made no move to add distance between them in front of the servants, which told Tyndall much. He knew who ruled at Raymoth's Wood, and it wasn't the knight with the fondness for rabbits.
"Begging your pardon, m'lady," said the man, "but I searched the accounts until I found the record. We do indeed owe a sum to Car Gwenyon for the purchase of honey. It is a substantial sum," he said.
"So substantial we cannot settle it at present?" she asked warningly.
"If my lady will inspect the listing," he said,
with a trace of warning in his voice,
"she may make her own determination."
Lady Crestine looked momentarily taken aback, but she recovered quickly.
"So I shall, and we will get to the bottom of this. I will ask my gentlemen to bide a moment while I do, and then perhaps they will entertain us further at a picnic out in the meadow."
She looked at her daughter pointedly.
"Why don't you go change into something suitable, my dear?"
she instructed.
"We will return anon with our luncheon."
When the ladies had left, Rondell bolted up out of his seat.
"What are we doing here?"
"Being seduced," reminded Tyndall casually. "I told you that. Is there something wrong with Lady Thena?"
"She's pretty,"
agreed Rondell sullenly.
"But she's young,
old enough to ask for Ishi's kiss, and perhaps more. She'll be wed within a year if her mother can find a right match. Until then, she wants to practice."
"Her mother is right there,"
Rondell whispered harshly, ignoring the mind-to-mind link that would keep them from being overheard.
"Her mother is all but holding her skirt," Tyndall pointed out.
"Look, she's a coquette. She's being groomed for such a life, as much as we are in our chosen profession. No one is asking for your hand in marriage, Ron. She just wants to enjoy an afternoon with a lusty young knight. If it bothers you so, stop short of assaulting her virtue, if you must."
"And are you like to do the same with her mother?"
Rondell asked accusingly.
"I'm uncertain as to just how much virtue Lady Crestine has left," joked Tyndall.
"But do try to hold yourself in check from saying anything too stupid. In fact, if you have any doubts, use the long ears to overhear what they're saying. I'm sure we will find it instructive."
"That would be impolite,"
Rondell said, when he couldn't think of a more damning condemnation.
"Intelligence gathering often is," reminded Tyndall, "but in a way we are on a mission, and if you doubt my summary of the situation, I invite you to listen to what the ladies say between themselves. You need not act on any information you so discover," he promised.
"All right,"
Rondell said, after a few moments of struggle. He sat down next to Tyndall, and they both cast the spell. Finding Crestine and her daughter within the manor by voice was not difficult. Indeed, the lady of the manor was being quite loud as she argued with her cowering servant.
"What do you mean we owe them 9 ounces of silver?"
she was demanding.
9 ounces and 1/2 ounce, and 3 silver pennies, when interest on the debt is calculated,"
the man corrected. "My lady, the honeys of Car Gwenyon are of surpassing quality, and are blessed by Noapis. My lord prefers a godly honey with which to sweeten his porridge."
"If you had any idea what your lord actually preferred,"
Crestine reproved angrily, "you would look upon me with pity and revulsion."
"What is the state of the treasury?"
"My lord has 4 ounces of silver and 13 half-ounces, as well as some copper coin. We should be receiving nearly double that this market, but we just paid—"
"Shut it!"
Crestine said angrily. "I have 2 hot-blooded young knights down there who are demanding payment, and my idiot husband left me nothing. Typical! Thena, how much coin do you have?"
"Mother, I—"
she protested.
"Don't you start with me, little lady," Crestine exploded. "I spent a ransom on your introduction party, and I know you received at least some token from those no-account uncles of yours. How much?" she demanded.
"I have but 3 ounces of silver left,"
the young woman admitted.
"What did you do with the rest of it?"
her mother shrieked.
"A girl has expenses, mother,"
the younger noblewoman shot back.
"Did you not teach me that?"
"Oh, shut it!
We have to do something to mollify them. Your father is already near to being the laughing stock of the Bontol Vales. The last thing we need is for it to be said he does not pay his debts. Damn him and his lack-lustre poetry!" And these are no mere country knights, Thina. These are men of position. They serve Sire Kay, the Dragon Slayer, who himself is the castellan to the Spellmonger. Mother, are not spellmongers mere bourgeoisie? Asked Thina disdainfully. Why do we care? You little idiot! Snarled Christine. This has naught to do with class. This is about power. The spellmonger is the talk of the entire Bontal, along with his dragon slayer and his hawk maiden. Now he has knights wandering around collecting his debts. This is a disaster. If we fall from favour now, when we are searching for a good match for you, all of our work will be undone. Mother, I hardly think a little honey, Lady Thina began. You hardly think. Let's leave it at that. It's not about the damn honey. It's about our reputation. It's bad enough we have those stupid rabbits all over everything. If we send these men away empty-handed, we will be the talk of the Bontal. We must mollify them. A token now, and a pledge of the balance. Yes, I think we can manage this situation. Thina, go change into the blue riding gown, boots, and don't bother with the undergown. It's a hot day. Mother, without the undergown they'll see, ah, my sweet, this is you hardly thinking again, she said with sarcastic sympathy. I know full well what they'll see. Why do you think I gave you the instruction? Now off with you, and do not scrimp on the cosmetics. You are about to see what a lady does when her idiot husband leaves her no choice in the matter. And you, have the team hitched to the carriage. We will be taking our lunch in the meadow by the river. Ensure no one disturbs us, she said with particular force, or I shall see you cleaning out pigsties until you're in your dotage. That, Tyndall said, as they let the spell drop, is what is actually going through Milady's mind. Not issues of propriety and chivalry. She's just like any wife with a debt collector. But we weren't sent here to demand payment, reminded Rondal. We were sent to merely inquire about it. And so we have, Tyndall pointed out. But Milady Christine is apparently unaware of the distinction. I don't know, Rondal said uneasily. It seems unchivalrous to take advantage of them like this. Are we not faithfully serving our master? Are we not advocating on his behalf? Are we not undertaking a mission? This is errantry, corrected Rondal. Not a real military mission. All the better, Tyndall insisted. Without errantry, chivalry is mere military service and social obligation. We aren't doing anything wrong. We haven't even done anything yet. Just bide a moment, then they'll return. We'll have a pleasant afternoon in their company and be on our way. Rondal was thoughtfully silent as he contemplated Tyndall's words, so Tyndall took the opportunity to contact Lady Pentandra, mind to mind. What is it? Pentandra asked brusquely. My pardon, my lady. Is this a bad time? No, I'm just on my way from one meeting to another. What is it, Tyndall? Trouble? Of a sort. Rondal and I are on an errand for Sire Kay in the Bontal. We're inquiring about an account to a local manor on his behalf, where the Lord is out, and the lady of the manor and her daughter wish to entertain us. When you say entertain, my lady understands exactly. I am well disposed to the idea, but Rondal, I see. Tyndall could hear quiet amusement in Pentandra's mental voice. Are the ladies objectionable? Quite comely and well-mannered. Rondal has misgivings over the propriety of the situation, but the daughter offered him Ishi's kiss, so I don't think there's much to worry about. And the mother? Lovelier than her lord deserves and in a poor marriage to a boor. A knight jongleur, with a flattering following of admirers and a fetish for rabbits. She endures it while grooming her daughter for higher station. That sounds suspiciously like my mother. Then her sins are her own to bear. I trust you aren't as concerned with propriety. I find myself strangely ambivalent on the matter at the moment, he said diplomatically. And the inspiration for this ambivalence? The hungry way in which the lady gazed upon me, like a starving dog looking at a bone. Then assuage your conscience, Sir Knight. You are likely not the first bone she's gnawed. That was my feeling as well. So tell your dull companion to attend to the higher matters of chivalry. Coaxing a young lady into womanhood is a sophisticated process, and he is called upon by the goddess to play but one small part.
He should embrace the opportunity to feature so boldly in this young woman's dreams. Soon enough she will be married to some boorish old knight herself, and be looking for distraction among her own errands. He should give her a fond memory to recall on future lonely nights. I shall relay your counsel, Lady Pentandra. Thank you for your wisdom. There was a mental snort. Wisdom? It sounds like the ladies are damn near panting. And if he can't handle a simple seduction like this, they're going to eat him alive once he gets to court. Lady Pentandra counsels that you accept your destiny boldly, Tyndall informed his fellow apprentice quietly, and without concern. She says also that this is training for your future political service. She's correct, you know. From what I've seen of the court, seduction and flattery are as common as daggers and poison. He thought guiltily of his knowledge of Master Menelon's dalliance with the shadow mage Lady Isili, back during the Battle of Timberwatch. That had been something to do with court politics, he knew, although the details were sketchy. It was a point of pride to him that he had never revealed his knowledge of the affair, especially to Lady Alia, or Lady Pentandra. The last thing he wanted to do was see Alia hurt, and he suspected that if Master Min wished to tell her, he would have done so. Rondal stared at him in disbelief.
She thinks I need to seduce a knight's daughter.
She thinks that you should allow yourself to be seduced to the extent that the lady is willing, countered Tyndall. As they are returning now, I suggest you plaster your warmest, most charming smile on your face and start thinking of poor jests to force her to laugh at. Rondal swallowed, a little pale-faced, and nodded. Both knights stood when the ladies returned, now clad in more demure travelling clothes. Once they assured them that they looked absolutely beautiful, using the courtly language they'd learned, they escorted the noble women to the yard where a small carriage waited. Rondal took the reins, with Lady Thena next to him, Christine and Tyndall behind. From the moment Christine sat next to him, her hands proved what her intentions were, even as she calmly gave directions to Rondal. He found his blood racing with excitement as she quietly caressed him, beginning innocently enough on his knee, but progressing quickly northward. He chanced a caress or two of his own that was met with her favour. One of the advantages of the sideless surcoat, Tyndall reflected, as his fingers traced the outline of her left nipple, was its discreet accessibility. He was gratified to see the lady close her eyes for a moment of quiet reflection, as she enjoyed his attentions. Lady Thena proved more demure, although she hooked her arm around Rondel's as he drove. The meadow the lady suggested was at the crest of a hill, overlooking the ripening fields of wheat and rye. On such a glorious summer's day, finding shade was their biggest concern. But a big elm tree near the side of the meadow proved ideal, and they spread their afternoon meal under its shady boughs. Bread, cheese, wine, fruit, a pot of preserves, and a half dozen boiled eggs made up their luncheon, while they talked about the weather, the village, the crops, and the news of the wider world. It was a pleasant meal, made better by the excellent weather and the attentive company. Tyndall found his foot, once his boots were removed, caressing Lady Christine's ankle under her skirt, out of sight of the others. He exchanged several meaningful glances with her as they watched Rondal struggle with Lady Thena's suggestive banter. Finally, the older noblewoman caught his eye, and something he knew was settled in her mind. "Don't be surprised when Lady Christine finds some excuse to leave you alone with Thena," Tyndall prepared Rondal, mind to mind.
"What? Why would she do that?
She needs to isolate you to give her daughter the chance to seduce you. She can't do it in front of us now, can she? That might be much for even these ladies. I doubt her mother's tutelage extends to that end. But then again,
so what am I supposed to do?"
Rondal whimpered, as Lady Thena suggestively ate an apple in front of him.
"Once you're alone, kiss her, you idiot,
and then enjoy yourself, though I'd advise stopping short of her virtue. Unless you like the maid enough to wed her, I'd advise caution in that regard."
"Now, you advise caution," grumbled Rondal. "Sir Tyndall, you said you had an understanding of horses?"
asked Lady Christine innocently.
"This mead overlooks a pasture where there is a glorious chestnut mare I covet. She belongs to one of our reeves, but I am considering purchasing her. I would delight in having your counsel on the matter. And where lies this pasture?"
"Just through that copse of trees," she said innocently, indicating the rough-grown barrier that divided one field from the other. "Then lead the way, my lady. I am always eager to see new horse flesh." He rose and assisted Christine daintily to her feet, and then led her boldly toward the copse. He didn't need to look back to know that there was a panicked look on Rondol's face. "Your daughter is quite lovely," he said quietly, when they were out of earshot. "But you must have been twice as beautiful in your maidenhood." "She does, unfortunately, favour her father in some ways," agreed Christine. "But I was a pretty maid, by all accounts. My father thought so, to the point where he married me off as soon as he was able to keep me out of trouble. He sent me to this backwater to live with the rabbit lord in his dingy little manor. He said he had to keep the peace in his house. I had many suitors at Thena's age," she bragged. "Are you so unhappy here at Raymoth's Wood, then?" Tyndall asked, as he held the branch out of her way. "It is a good life," she admitted. "I have my child and my dalliances. I have friends here. And my husband, as dull as he may be, does provide for us in his fashion. But it drains me," she confessed. "Every day is like a heavy fog, and I crave the slightest breeze to blow it away." She stopped once they were a few rods into the wood and out of sight of their companions, and she turned to face him. He could see she was breathing far heavier than her exertions should warrant. He expected her to be demure, but she surprised him with her directness. "You are a handsome lord, Sir Tyndall. Young, robust, and eager. I admire that passion. And you, my lady, are beautiful." It was a simple statement, but one which caught Christine by surprise, and was not unwelcome. He could have praised her for any number of things: her wisdom, her daughter, the beauty of her home, her management of the estate. But it was flattery of her own beauty she craved, and he was not lying. Tyndall did find her beautiful, even if the blush of maidenhood had long fled her face. He pushed a lock of hair out of her eyes unnecessarily. "I envied the rabbit lord in this one thing." "You flatter me, my lord," she said in a low voice, "and yet I cannot help but wonder at your sincerity. My daughter is a girl," Tyndall finished, "a kitten who needs to sharpen her claws on the dull wood of my companion. You, my lady, are a woman, and for all of your propriety," he said, without a trace of irony in his voice, "you are just as much in need of honing your claws as she, if not more." She chuckled and kissed him. "An old cat with but one kitten," she mused. "What need have I for claws? When a cat must lie with a rabbit every night, no doubt her claws get restless," countered Tyndall, kissing her in return. His arms wrapped around her mature hips as he stared her in the eye. "My lady, do we really need to banter, sir?" She sighed and smiled. "It is refreshing to have a young knight who understands the game, Sir Tyndall, and thus relieve me of the burden of being a coquette." Christine moved closer, and he embraced her ever more tightly, feeling every inch of her womanly curves cleave to him. Her hands felt his back and shoulders as she pressed her breasts full into his chest. He found her lips in earnest now. They were full and warm and inviting, lacking the hesitation and self-consciousness of a younger maid, but also lacking the sophistication of a more worldly woman. He gave her high marks for enthusiasm, however. She kissed him hungrily, her mouth communicating her need and desire, and accepting his passion in return. He felt himself grow ever more aroused by her ardour. Finally, he broke the kiss. "I'll take it my lady knows of some leafy bower nearby, where we are unlikely to be disturbed." "I know just the place," she nodded impishly, as she shrugged out of her sideless surcoat. Her soft cotton shift revealed she had neglected underclothing, no doubt due to the heat of the day. Tyndall measured her breasts with his hands without much interference now, and he appreciated their weight and firmness. Lady Christine appreciated the attention, arching her back and pressing them more firmly into his palms. "And have you shown many young knights this bower?" he asked in a low voice, as he allowed her breasts to go free.
"Not all were as fortunate as you, Sir Tyndall," she said, leading him by the hand deeper into the grove. "I might be free with my favours, but I am choosy about to whom I grant them."
Tyndall kept his doubts about her choosiness to himself. She led him to a dense cluster of cedar trees, clustered around a single low boulder. From within, he could see, there would be little chance of them being spied upon. Christine nearly skipped over to the boulder.
My shrine to Ishi.
Christine giggled, turning to face him again. She looked 10 years younger now, her hair unbound and her formal bearing dropped with her outer clothes. He kissed her again and felt her busy hands.
Now, just how does this catch work?
Their coupling was passionate, gentle and fierce at the same time. Tyndall had rarely had the opportunity to explore a woman of such mature charms, compared to the young girls who threw themselves at him. He found he admired them greatly, once he had removed Christine's shift and saw her naked under the trees. He did not speak as he pushed her gently back on the boulder, making a pillow of her shift under her. He kissed his way down her body, as he'd been taught, leaving a trail of lips from her ear to the veil between her breasts, and thence to her quivering belly.
My lord, she sighed, happily, as she guessed his destination. Few men of your age are so attentive to a lady's needs, and few ladies are willing to judge a man not on height or length or width, but by his appetite, he said, and began to pleasure his hostess.
Too true,
she groaned, laying her hand on the back of his head. When he had taken her to the brink of ecstasy, he disengaged and stood.
My lord,
she asked breathlessly,
is there a... Ah,
she said, understanding his need as he pulled off his jerkin and hose.
I do so enjoy a bold night.
She examined him thoroughly with her eyes, once he had doffed his clothes entirely,
and one with such a rampant lance.
Tyndall said little else as he climbed between her knees. He found her perch on the boulder sturdy enough so that he could entertain the lady's lust with proper devotion. He labored at the task fitfully, doing what he could to continue his hostess' pursuit of pleasure while enjoying it himself. Soon he tired of the position and encouraged Christine to turn herself over.
Like the peasants do it,
she agreed, lustfully, as she did as he bid.
Like the animals do it.
Does your husband not enjoy such diversions, my lady?
He asked, unsure whether mentioning him would cool her desire.
Pah! He knows but one manner of pleasure, and is deaf to suggestions of another,
she said, looking over her shoulder.
But I revel in the primal nature of such positioning. Surely Ishi intended her gifts to be enjoyed in every manner they can be.
Tyndall seated himself firmly within her, causing her to gasp. He paused his actions until she protested.
Is the rock uncomfortable, my lady?
He asked, as he grabbed the hold of her naked hips.
I cannot even feel it,
she confessed breathlessly.
Indeed, I can feel but one thing, and feel it from my head to my toes.
Tyndall was glad she was not situated so that she could see the grin that spread across his face at the admission. No man tires of hearing his manhood praised, he decided. Nearly an hour later, the chestnut mare long forgotten, the two returned to Rondol and Thena. The young noblewoman was lying with her head contentedly on Rondol's stomach, and the young knight was looking both unbearably guilty and unmistakably pleased with himself. Tyndall was likewise pleased with himself. Lady Christine had been a passionate woman and an adept lover, a woman wasted on the tepid rabbit lord, he knew. He counted himself well satisfied, and had satisfied Christine repeatedly, and a little loudly, according to Rondol, when he spoke mind to mind.
I nearly came after you when I heard the scream,
Rondol admitted.
Thankfully, Thena persuaded me to stay. She can be very persuasive,
he added.
I'm very pleased that you resisted the urge to rescue her,
Tyndall answered, though I dare say the lady would have found something creative to do with another knight around. She seems very resourceful. Rondol didn't say anything for a moment.
What could she possibly do with... Oh, dear Trigg's tender ears, Tyndall. Do these women have no shame?
I inspected Lady Christine fairly thoroughly, Tyndall reported. If she has some, she must hoard it like a miser.
How about her daughter?
Lady Thena will make some lord a very passionate wife some day, God's willing,
Rondol said, as the two lovers approached the blanket.
It sounds like you had a good time,
Tyndall said, reluctant to get any more details. As curious as he might be, it was still Rondol, and the thought of him engaged in such sport was not appealing to Tyndall's mind.
I did,
Rondol agreed guiltily.
I think she did, too.
From the look on her face, that would be a safe wager,
Tyndall guessed. After quickly cleaning up the picnic, packing it away and mounting the carriage again, The party rode back to the manor as the late summer afternoon unfolded around them.
"About your debt to Carguenyon," Tyndall brought up casually, as they finally entered the overly ornate gates of Raymothwood.
"My lady, if your estate could pay but a token of 1 or 2 ounces of silver," he proposed, "I am certain I could persuade my master to wait on the balance until, say, sometime after the equinox. Then we can return for the full amount, perhaps, when you have had long notice of it."
Christine quietly smiled.
"That is a gracious and generous offer, Sir Tyndall. I think that would be an appropriate course of action until I can consult with my lord."
And it neatly sidestepped the embarrassing issue of the state of her treasury, as well as promising her a return visit, he noted to himself.
"And I do hope we can encounter one another again, perhaps at a baronial function."
"I'm afraid my companion and I are men of action," protested Tyndall. "We have little time for such social affairs. We expect to be deployed to Gilmora soon, to face the goblin hordes. Not all knights, I'm afraid, have time to wax poetic at the sight of sunset and the antics of rabbits. Some must make their fortune with their swords, not their quills."
Apparently, Sir Gammon's works tended to dwell on simple pleasures and natural beauty, subjects with which Lady Christine had quickly tired of. His one long martial work, she had confided between sorties, was a saga of the War of the Ancient Knights. It had been somewhat popular for a while in parts of Sindaria, but the verses were considered hopelessly derivative of the great Golden Age poets of the later Majocracy by those who fancied themselves critics. Tyndall vowed to procure a copy, just so that he could witness the dull wit of the rabbit lord himself.
"When must you depart for such dangers, good knights?"
asked Lady Thena, pouting prettily. She had apparently grown fond of Sir Rondal, and from the blushes and sidelong glances the lad cast in her direction, the feeling was mutual. Mere shallow infatuation, in Tyndall's opinion, hardly more than the tryst he and Christine had shared. But Thena's attention was also something his fellow apprentice needed more than the breath of life itself after his difficult year. Also, in Tyndall's opinion,
"We could be deployed any time now,"
Rondal said slowly, "and likely will, by the equinox. We await word on our precise orders, but our deployment is not in doubt."
"Are you afraid?"
asked Thena quietly. Rondal tried to console her.
"No more afraid than your father is, no doubt, when he goes to serve his liege in war."
Thena snorted derisively.
"Daddy! Daddy couldn't hurt a rabbit. You should see how Mother orders him about."
"Thena," Christine reproved,
"be respectful of your sire."
"As you are, Mother,"
she shot back, challenging, over her shoulder.
"If Father ever had to face a real goblin, he'd soil himself, and you know it. He is a parchment knight, Sir Rondal, hardly better than a manor reeve, proud of his lineage and his lore, but he is not a man of action like you, brave knights."
There was no disguising the contempt Thena held for her father, to the point where Tyndall began to feel uncomfortable on the cuckolded lord's behalf. Indeed, he found himself defending the ineffectual man.
"Now, Lady Thena," Tyndall said, shaking his head, "there is more to being a knight than mere vain glory. It is position as well as station. Not all are blessed by doing with great skill at arms, yet that does not lessen their fervour or their devotion to their duty. Not all knights are fortunate enough to have to heed Duin's horn and defend their homes. I pray your sire never finds the need."
"I am certain he would defend his home and his family as gallantly as any knight," agreed Rondal.
"In his terrifying armour,"
agreed Lady Thena, giggling,
"with his helm crested with his dire rabbit ears."
"What?"
asked Rondal, surprised.
"Rabbit ears?"
asked Tyndall, amused.
"My lady, you jest."
"I fear she does not, my lords,"
Lady Christine said quietly.
"My dear lord, Gammon is so proud of his illustrious house and its principles. Fairness, reverence, modesty, qualities law dictates are shared by the rabbit. He therefore had twin silver rabbit ears added to his war helmet as a crest."
There was little doubt in Tyndall's mind how his new lover viewed the ornaments.
"What a fearsome visage he presents,"
Lady Thena said sarcastically, her disgust obvious.
"At my introduction tournament, he had the audacity to enter into the lists with the sword as he gets dizzy on horseback.
He strode into the lists with that ridiculous helmet, and I nearly died on the spot of embarrassment.
He did cut a comical figure, added Lady Christine with a bitter chuckle.
By the grace of Trigg, I maintained my composure as a good wife should. Sir Dorix of Masran gallantly fought my lord, but in the end Sir Gammon prevailed. Honestly, mother, Sir Dorix let Daddy win that bout to spare you the shame of dishonour, as well as the ridicule the crowd developed for those preposterous ears. Sir Dorix is 10 times the man my father is.
Christine did little to defend her husband.
Sir Dorix is a gallant knight, she agreed evenly, and I assure you, my daughter, he was properly consoled for his gracious loss.
Did you not favour your lord husband on his victory, milady? Asked Tyndall, surprised. Had he a wife, he would expect at least some affectionate return in the wake of a victory.
Of course I did, as any good wife would on such a magnificent triumph. But my lord's admiration for rabbits, unfortunately, extends not to their lusty nature, but their penchant for quickness. I had plenty of time to reward my lord and console his victim.
She smiled fondly at the memory.
Twice. Mother! Squealed Thena wickedly. You and Sir Dorix. And to think that at the same time I was... Never mind,
she said, blushing.
What?
Demanded Lady Christine.
Say not that you gave away your virtue that evening. Thena! You know! No, mother!
The younger woman said, rolling her eyes.
I am as pure as the day you bore me into this world, where it matters,
she added with a naughty grin. But while the manor door reserved for my future lord husband, is she willing, remains sealed,
perhaps the tradesman's entrance was unlocked that night for the first time,
she said with a special relish.
Thena!
Her mother shrieked.
Gentlemen, I must apologize for my brazen daughter. She is but newly come to the mysteries of Ishii, and has not learned yet how to deport herself discreetly, in polite company. And I apologize for my mother, gentlemen, who is far more concerned with how to marry me off to a rich lord than to seeing to my future happiness.
Thena pouted.
Did you know she's considering sending me to a temple school? A maiden's school? An abbey?
A man often enjoys a wife who has her letters and has been instructed in the rites of the home, Rondel said diplomatically.
It's a temple on a river island,
Thena said, her displeasure clear.
Where no men are allowed to go, or boys. There I am to be trained to be some man's wife. I will likely be condemned to some union with some simple country knight who idolizes ferrets and writes them poetry, bearing his brats and watching myself age into ugliness.
She stole a bitter glance at her mother, as if she was accusing her dame of such poor taste. Is that not the lot of any woman? Countered Tyndall. Just as it is for a man to see his strength fade with the years.
I am a maiden, my lord,
Thena riposted.
I am rising in my glory. I wish a worthy man to be my husband and marry me on the temple steps in front of the entire barony, my dress the most beautiful of the age. I deserve a strong, vibrant lord, a husband rich in spirit and coin, and one who will not let me order him about like a servant, timidly accepting what favours I deign to grant him, and certainly not some rodent-obsessed, obsequious lapdog who barks at whatever he sees and belches forth verse daily in small pellet-sized piles.
Thena's ire with her father was palpable.
How deserve?
Asked Rondel. Tyndall's heart immediately began to sink. The idiot didn't know enough to keep his mouth shut.
What entitles you to such a husband, my lady? Am I not fair?
Demanded Thena arrogantly.
Am I not of noble house? Am I not deserved of a mate worthy of my station?
You are a fair maiden, agreed Rondel awkwardly, and exceptionally pleasant company, but
why would you make a good wife? Does not every man want a fair wife?
Asked Lady Christine, confused. It does not harm a marriage in my estimation, Tyndall observed. If one must wed, then marrying a fair woman is preferable to marrying a plain one.
But neither makes a woman a wife,
pointed out Rondel. If comeliness was a guarantee of virtue, then the whores of Barrowbell would make the finest wives in the world. They would at least know the business, Tyndall joked. On what basis does one judge a wife? If she is committed to the health and happiness of her husband, that is a blessing, offered Rondel.
I do wish my lord good health and a long life,
agreed Lady Christine. Yet if I was not fair, he would eventually lose interest in me. What interest he has. By Ishishnibs, he cares more for pen and parchment than for me, or the needs of my body. A good wife, Sir Rondell. Had he ambition and talent, I could have been the best of wives, I assure you, and the most loyal. Had he been but worthy of me, I could have made Trigg Allmother herself jealous of my fidelity. But when a man is too weak to bend my will, or too deferential of my wrath, and sees more value in the mindless praise of strangers than the earnest praise of a loving wife, even the best of wives will turn bitter, my lords. Pray take heed of that counsel, before you take your own brides.
You would your husband countermanded your will, my lady? Asked Rondell in surprise.
That seems an odd wish for a wife. It would be a refreshingly novel change, my lord. If it is advice on marriage you wish, then heed this. Grow not content and complacent after your nuptials, my young lords, nor stray too long from your blades.
That is good advice, agreed Tyndall, wondering if there would be time to get Christine alone again before they departed.
Further, she continued, be ever stronger than your wives, and let them prosper in the wake of your ambition, lest they grow impatient and seek to find their own. Keep them sated and interested and intrigued and inspired. If you desire their respect, then endeavour to earn it in some manly fashion, not by absent praise and the repetition of the flattery of your admirers. If you desire a worthy wife, then you must earn her respect and devotion afresh, daily.
That seems too akin to labour, my lady, Tyndall said disdainfully. I'm afraid I will die a bachelor knight, likely in a duel with a jealous husband. Lady Thena giggled.
There are worse deaths for a brave knight, my lord. How about yourself, Sir Rondell? Are you destined for a lonely dotage?
She asked expectantly.
I shall wed, I feel,
Rondell said dreamily.
At least, that is my desire. Is it, Sir Rondell?
Asked Lady Christine, suddenly interested. Not before my term of service at arms is finished, he added hurriedly, but when the war is over, I can see taking comfort in hearth and home. Perhaps a small country estate, like Sire Kay's.
Or Raymoth's Wood, offered Lady Christine, with no male heirs. Thena's husband is destined to gain the manor upon his death. I will bear that in mind, my lady,
Rondell said, blushing. By the time the carriage returned to the manor, Tyndall was already growing anxious to leave. Their time at Raymoth Wood had been productive and entertaining, but as dusk neared, so too did the prospect of encountering the Rabbit Lord. He tarried at the manor just long enough to collect the promised token payment and spend a few stolen moments bidding his lusty hostess farewell. Rondell had been likewise occupied with Lady Thena, who went so far as to gift him with a kerchief she had embroidered to remember her by.
A most educational bit of errantry,
Tyndall remarked as they rode from the rabbit-ridden manor at a brisk pace.
All in all, a delightful afternoon. I'm still shaking with nerves, confessed Rondell. I feel as if I have erred, somehow.
Erred? Not against propriety, unless you stole her virtue.
I did not, insisted Rondell, panicked. I merely inspected it closely.
Then you have naught to worry about, soothed Tyndall. If there is no breach, then what could her father possibly say about it, even if he did know?
And you? You who abetted an adultery?
If I had been the first to venture down that path, I might feel a pang of conscience, agreed Tyndall, after a moment's thought. But that path was well trod ere I arrived, likely before I was born.
Yet her marriage is a holy sacrament, countered Rondell, as they rode down the long slope. Have you not enticed her to break her vow, indebting her to Trigg's grace?
That is between her and the goddess, pointed out Tyndall. It is not a knight's job to police the virtue of anyone but himself. To offer guidance to a fellow knight, at need or request, perhaps, and to lead the people by example, certainly. But to hold a wife to her vow, who has broken it so often it leans in the wind like a broken fence? Let her bride sister preach her the virtues of fidelity and chastity. As the gods did not see fit to call me to their service, I shall not deliver a sermon on their behalf. Save, perhaps, for Ishi, he chuckled. Rondell made a sour face.
Ishi did not call you. You hang upon her like a lovesick suitor. I'll grant you this. You play in her realm far better than I ever will. He sounded dejected about the subject, too dejected for a lad who had just enjoyed a dalliance.
"It is not a matter of luck or fortune," he explained. "I see love as a worthy pursuit, and just as I pursue magic and swordplay, I seek to divine its rules and practice it as a craft, instead of sitting back and waiting for Ishi's favour to bring her blessing. What crime is there in that?"
"It is a sport beyond my talents," Rondal said, shaking his head. "You have the face and the heart for it."
I do not."
"Argue not in favour of your weaknesses," counselled Tyndall, reasonably. Rondal blushed.
"It's not a weakness. I want love in my life. Aye, and a bit of lust," he admitted self-consciously. "But I am just not the type of man most maidens are drawn to. Not the ones I prefer, at any rate."
"You weren't the type of man who could lead a squad through the countryside either," Tyndall pointed out. "Or build a bridge out of rocks, magic and spit. But you learned."
"That's different. I had to learn those things. And now I'm saying you have to learn this too."
"But why?" his fellow asked, miserably.
Because it's the great game, Rondal. The duel eternal betwixt man and maid. And the study need not be arduous. You needn't become a tournament champion in order to learn the basics of sword play."
Rondal sighed and slumped in his saddle.
"You aren't going to shut up about this," he reasoned, "so go ahead and instruct me, O sagacious master."
"Pray attend," Tyndall instructed, as the Inarian masters had always begun their lectures.
"It's actually quite simple. Stripped of all superstition and fluff, women, most women, want the most desirable man in the village as a husband. That is, the man with the most wealth, fame, position, power, fair looks, charisma, muscles, cows, just the most. And men, most men, prefer pretty women for wives, pretty and young."
"True enough," grunted Rondal with a heavy sigh.
"Go on."
"Nearly all of the women will compete for the attentions of the most powerful of men, and accept those of lesser status as their beauty, skills, and guile dictate. Men, on the other hand, tend to compete for the fairest and warmest ladies within their class and station, and sometimes outside it."
"It occurs to me that you have a low opinion of womenfolk, Sir Tyndall," Rondal said sarcastically.
"Not at all," Tyndall replied, a little hurt. "I don't blame women for competing for the best of men, nor men for the fairest of maids. They but follow their natural interests. If men value youth and beauty and warmth, then the women who present those most excellent qualities in the best manner will win the attention of the best of men," he reasoned.
"Yet whole trades exist to cheat that market," Rondal pointed out.
"The cosmeticians and seamstresses of Barrowbell, for example, and the perfumers. And do not goldsmiths practice the trade of gilding to make a man seem wealthy beyond his station?" Tyndall pointed out. "And jongleurs would starve if there were no knights wishing to boast of their achievements. Why? To make themselves look far more successful, to advance their reputation among their peers, and ideally to secure as sweet a marriage as Sir Gammon managed to procure. A man might rent a fine horse, for instance, or use a rich cloak to cover modest dress."
He looked at his fellow thoughtfully. "And there are even a few who have been known to be less than fastidious with the truth when speaking to a maid."
"I will not lie to bed a woman," Rondal said flatly. "That's dishonourable."
"Nor need you," Tyndall stressed. "But the truth your lips speak may not be the truth your lady love hears. For example, ask me what kind of horse I ride."
"What? I can plainly see what kind of horse you ride."
"No,"
Tyndall said patiently. "Ask me, as a lady might, what horse I might ride."
"Sir Tyndall, what kind of mount do you ride?" Rondal asked, batting his eyelashes exaggeratedly.
"Today I rode the courser," Tyndall explained.
"But that's the only horse you have," protested Rondal.
That was not technically true, but this was the only horse he'd been riding this summer.
"But the answer presumes that I have many horses," Tyndall pointed out, "without actually admitting that I have but the one. Horses represent wealth," he reminded his fellow. "They're expensive to keep and care for. To own one is to be a man of means, by definition. To have more than one, well, that's enough for country maids, of course, but in the cities, like Castabriel and Barrowbell, a man's position and presentation account for more. And his fame," he reminded himself. You saw how the ladies responded when we admitted we were in battle? When we dropped Master Minolan's name? About that, Rondol interrupted. Why didn't you want them to know we were magi? I thought we were trying to impress them. Tyndall scowled. And get caught up in a magic show? I had more important business in mind, and we were already impressing them. As mere errants, we were attractive enough, and they were remote and lonely enough. Magic would have just complicated matters. When entertaining ladies, be a knight first, a mage second. Who made up that rule? Demanded Rondal. I did. Just now, Tyndall said smugly. Tyndall felt good. It was a lovely day. He had just enjoyed an exciting and relaxing afternoon with a charming and skilled lady, quite sating the itch for feminine companionship he'd been nursing for some time. More importantly, despite his fellows' misgivings about their dalliance, Rondal was clearly the better man for it. He rode more proudly now, less like a sack of potatoes and more like a proper knight. It was amazing what the attentions of an eager young woman could do to fortify a young man, Tyndall reflected. He knew some fellows only felt the pull of their hearts, and other regions infrequently, and could sate their needs quickly in the back room of a tavern for a few coins. That was not his preference, though he did not eschew it at need. He preferred the eternal dance of seduction, even with its dangers, to the cold certainty of a whore's embrace. But he also knew its potential costs, the possibility of rejection, loss of reputation, or the earning of an unsavory one, the possibility of scandal, jealous lovers, cuckolded husbands, irate fathers, angry nuns, demanding mothers, and that didn't even count the myriad of disasters that stalked a man when he courted a woman's heart. There was always a chance a child could result. That was one fortune Tyndall had been spared, to his knowledge, but Trigg's hands sometimes reaped what was sown by Ishi's desires. There were some women who would cling to you as if they'd paid for you in the market, others who were passionate to the point of obsession, still others who sought no more than to use your seduction to further their own conspiracies. Many could confuse lusty indulgence for love, and tender hearts sometimes resulted. Tyndall disliked being in that position, but he had been a few times now. A certain innkeeper's daughter continued to dote on him, to the extent of paying for a letter to be sent to him upriver to Sevendor last summer, mentioning her lack of a proper husband no less than 4 times in 2 pages. He had penned a short but sympathetic response, citing the nature of his new duties was such that precluded, alas, any commitments of the heart. But now he looked forward fondly to visiting her magnificent inn the next time he was in the vicinity. He hoped he'd satisfied the maid's honour, even if he'd frustrated her designs. Then there had been the moon-eyed girl in Barrowbell, some courtier's youngest daughter. Pila, or Pilsa, or something like that. She had followed Tyndall around from occasion to occasion, trying to attract his attention. After briefly flirting with the idea of a liaison after a few heated moments in a Barrowbell garden one night, Tyndall had tried to avoid her. While she was a fair enough maid, she was rather dim and unintelligent. Worse, she was uninteresting and annoying. She had mentioned marriage within 2 hours of meeting him, and had been so obsequiously adamant about her intrusion into his sphere that he had done his best to ensure he had other companionship when she was around. That hadn't helped in the end. Every pretty new coquette who vied for his attention only seemed to inflame her passion and make her more resolute. She started weeping when she saw him, which just made him dread her presence all the more. By the time he'd boarded the barge to Sevendor, he was thankful to leave the wretched girl behind. Still, the experience had been valuable. Had he been captivated by her allure and her demonstrated willingness to dally, it would have been easy enough to wake up and find himself wedded, doomed to a long, unhappy marriage. Had she set her cap on Rondal, the poor boy would have been conquered in short order. That was one very good reason why he had to teach his fellow apprentice the rudiments of the laws of love, else he'd find himself condemned to a lifetime of matrimony to a woman of low quality. And as annoying as Rondal himself was, there was no way he would wish such a fate even on an annoying acquaintance. A man who settled for such deserved the miserable result, in Tyndall's estimation. While he was ruminating on the subject, Rondal spoke again. "I just wonder the fairness and propriety of pursuing such pleasure so casually," confessed Rondal.
It seems like a lot of work for such a tenuous reward. Tyndall smirked. Then perhaps you're doing it incorrectly.
I assure you I am not, Rondol snorted. I enjoy such interludes. I like girls. They're just,
he said, trailing off wordlessly.
Aren't they, though?
Agreed Tyndall dreamily.
I like girls, too. So why not study how they like to be liked? If it makes you feel better, understand that while every girl has the potential to grant you Ishi's blessing, not every girl wants to drag you before a bride's sister's altar. They're all looking for a good match as much as you are. And if we are not a good match, many are willing to explore an unpromising line of interest in the name of experience. As long as you understand what a maid desires, really, and not what is likely to fall out of her mouth in her banter, honing your own experience with one maid prepares you for when those skills will matter most to you. Would not a maid be troubled to know that a lad she fancies has honed himself with several other girls? Rondol countered.
Quite the contrary, Tyndall explained. In my experience, and according to the noble sages of the Crimson Arts of Castle Heart, the more a lad is known to keep the company of women, the more women desire to keep his company.
Yet would not a woman who did likewise? Rondol began.
Tyndall stopped him. He knew where this line of inquiry led.
Nay, rather say a woman who was known to have done likewise, he amended. Reputation is vitally important to both men and women. Discretion is an essential part of successful dalliance. There are many, many wives and women of high station who enjoy a pristine reputation, but who discreetly are as randy as a dockside whore. When one becomes conversant with the codes and ciphers of desire, one can discern the subtle hints and clues that tell such women out from those who merely seek a good match, or no match at all. But for a lad, the more maidens who take your company, the more maidens will desire to take your company. It is as simple as that. They seem to desire what the others have, simply because it is desired. Jewelry, estates, or men. Women seem particularly intrigued with what each other possess, he said thoughtfully.
Rondol considered.
Not everyone. Lady Pentandra. Oh, she pays attention, Tyndall said, with a special knowledge. She's just very subtle about it, and she doesn't feel as if she's in the same domain as most women, so she doesn't heed the allure of coveting that which she doesn't have. She measures herself arcanely, and finds most women wanting. But she is a special case, he admitted. Do you think she pines for Master Min?
Asked Rondol, hesitantly.
No, Tyndall said, after considering the matter for a moment. Not really. I think she's got the part of him she really wants, and has no issue sharing the remainder with Lady Alia.
I wonder if Lady Alia feels the same way,
Rondol said quietly.
You ask her, dismissed Tyndall. That's not the sort of question that you're going to get an answer to. Not a useful one.
I'd rather not,
agreed his companion.
I hope our next call is not so fraught with excitement. Please tell me that Loughhorn Manor doesn't have any nubile young maidens lurking to spring on a poor fellow.
Tyndall chuckled.
I don't think you have to worry. Lord Dwayne of Loughhorn is a well-known devotee to Andrus, according to Lady Crestine. He has taken the oath of Andrus never to enjoy the blessing of Ishi. Indeed, he has established a small cloister of his cult's order in Loughhorn, where he has gathered a congregation of his co-religionists.
Oh, Rondol said quietly.
Andrus was a minor but colourful imperial deity of music, poetry and discourse, who had survived the Narasi conquest relatively intact. His followers were ascetics of a sort, but not like the humble monks of Ludris or the wandering priests of Heras. Andrus' devotees were exclusively male, and all forswore enjoying the touch of a woman. By denying themselves Ishi's blessing, their sect taught, their suffering and unfulfilled longing honoured the god and fueled their devotion. While that seemed like an innocuous enough religion, to Tyndall's mind, in practice, most of the followers of Andrus seemed little inclined to ever seek the comfort of a woman's touch to begin with. Her seamstress, perhaps, but not her touch. While the oath of Andrus prohibited sexual contact with women, it tacitly endorsed initiates seeking comfort in the arms of their fellow devotees, or passing knights errant, or handsome farm boys. The priests of Andrus were not always particular. You aren't concerned with your virtue amongst such men?
asked Tyndall, amused, but surprised by his companion's agreeability.
After dealing with those two ladies, Rondell said carefully, I think I can manage dodging a lusty, drunken Androcene better than I could another randy noblewoman.
It would be more straightforward, Tyndall admitted. I have heard tales of their inner rites. They are reputed to be quite lurid. Whispers of all-male orgies and other outlandish behaviour were frequently associated with some of the Androcenes. The Order did little to dispel their reputation.
So have I, nodded Rondell warily, which explains what they do with that much honey.
Oh, yes, I suppose it does, Tyndall said, his mind swimming. He wished Rondell hadn't mentioned that.
Besides, added Rondell mildly, with your pretty face and muscular buttocks around to distract them, I doubt I'll have much trouble.
Tyndall winced, but he couldn't deny the truth of it. He'd had adherents of Andrus, both formal and informal, admire him, sometimes in ways that made him quite uncomfortable. But he did find the attention flattering, he had to admit. So far his own virtue in such matters had been secure, but he was wary about strong drink in such circumstances. He was about to deliver a classy retort when he felt the beginnings of mind-to-mind contact.
Tyndall, are you busy? Asked the no-nonsense tones of Master Minolan's mental voice.
We're on the road at the moment. What service can I do for you, Master?
You can cut short your itinerary and return to Sevendor at your soonest convenience.
Master? Why?
Because Commander Terlaman has finally come up with an important assignment for you two, he answered. He's got a mission that he thinks would benefit from the attention of a high mage, or a night mage, or two.
May I ask the nature of the mission, Master?
You may, but I don't have many details yet. Just that it's highly dangerous, behind enemy lines, and somewhere in Gilmora. And the Lord Commander wants both of us, Master? He wants someone, and I'm sending both of you. You won't be alone, but you are going to have to suspend your errantry for a while. Duty calls. Don't delay. I won't have much time to brief you before you go, and soon I'll have less. Alia is in labour, and she'll bear the child before you arrive. His master was trying to sound businesslike, but Tyndall could tell how excited he was.
That's wonderful news, Master.
Yes, but the Alka Alon are buzzing like bees for some reason, and it has a lot of us concerned. There have been, well, we'll have time to talk later. For now, wrap up your business and get back here as fast as your horses can bear you.
I'll tell Rondell. Tyndall responded with a heavy sigh.
Oh, well, it was fun while it lasted.
Do that, agreed Master Minolan. In truth, I almost wish you weren't going. I could use your help. I'm going to have my hands full with the new baby, the Alka Alon embassy, giant hawks, stumbling apprentices, a moody wife, sneaky queens, weird happenings in the forest, riotous river folk, and stubborn Karshak. Just wait until you see who won the spellmonger's trial this year, too. But once you get back from Gilmora, assuming for the moment you will come back from Gilmora, then we'll sit down and discuss your progress. Both of your progress. And your future in Sevendor.
That sounds ominous, Master.
Tyndall observed.
It was meant to, growled Master Minolan. Don't think that just because you've managed to get through your basic training that you've progressed beyond my criticism.
Tyndall swallowed.
Never, Master.
Good to hear it. Now, finish up what you were doing and make haste for Sevendor. You depart from here in 5 days. You should be back in Barrowbell within 2 weeks. From there on, you are Terlaman's problem.
Master Minolan ended the discussion and Tyndall opened his eyes. Rondell hadn't even realized he'd been communicating.
It looks like your virtue is spared a challenge from Andrus, he said.
Master Minolan just recalled us to Sevendor.
Why?
We're being deployed. To Gilmora. So, I hope you enjoyed Lady Thena's charms, because somehow I think it will be a while before you get the opportunity again.
What was worse, Tyndall realized, was that now that they were deployed, they were unlikely to be around Raymoth's Wood come the equinox. It was unlikely that he'd be able to collect on Lady Christine's debt. Well, perhaps he'd visit her on his return. If not, he realized, there were hundreds of castles and thousands of manors across the kingdom stuffed with ladies as fair or fairer than those of Raymoth's Wood. It would be a shame not to investigate such places, he reasoned. Errantry truly was its own reward, as Sire Kay had told him,
and Tyndall planned on getting as much reward as he could.